On board our boat one summer, we had a book by Maurice Maeterlinck called The Fourth Dimension, the fourth dimension being time, which, according to Dunn, doesn't exist in itself, but is always relative to the person who has the idea of time. Maeterlinck used a curve to illustrate Dunn's theory. Standing in the present, on the highest point of the curve, you can look back and see the past, or forward and see the future, all in the same instant. Or, if you stand off to one side of this curve, as I am doing, your eye wanders from one to the other without any distinction. In dreams, the mind wanders in and out of the present, through the past and the future, unable to distinguish between what has not yet happened and what has already befallen. Maeterlinck said that if you kept track of your dreams, writing them down as soon as you woke, you would find that a certain number were of things that had already happened, others would be connected with the present, but a certain number would be about things that had not yet happened. This was supposed to prove that time is just a dimension of space and that there is no difference between the two, except that our consciousness roves along this curve of time. In my mind, I always think of that summer as the Maeterlinck summer, the year we wrote down our dreams. The children always called it the Year of the Bears. Towards the end of June, or it might have been July, we headed up Jervis Inlet. This inlet cuts through the coast range of British Columbia and extends by winding reaches in a northerly direction for about 60 miles. Originally, perhaps a fault in the Earth's crust, and later scoured out by a glacier, since retreated, it is roughly a mile wide and completely hemmed in on all sides by stupendous mountains, rising from almost perpendicular shores to heights of from 5 to 8,000 feet. All the soundings on the chart are marked 100 fathoms with the no-bottom mark right up to the cliffs. Stunted pines struggle up some of the ravines, but their hold on life is short. Sooner or later, a winter storm or spring avalanche sweeps them out and away, and next summer there will be a new cascade in their place. Once you get through Agamemnon Channel into the main inlet, you just have to keep going. There is no shelter, no place to anchor. In summertime, the wind blows up the inlet in the morning, down the inlet from 5 o'clock on. In winter, I am told, the wind blows down the inlet most of the time, so strong and with such heavy willowaws that no boat can make against it. I know that up at the head of the inlet, most trappers' cabins are braced with heavy poles towards the north. For some reason that I have forgotten, probably the hope of trout for supper, we decided to anchor in Vancouver Bay for lunch. Vancouver Bay is about halfway up Jervis, and only makes a very temporary anchorage good for a couple of hours on a perfectly calm day. It is a deep bay between very high mountains, with a valley and three trout streams. You can drop your hook on a narrow mud bank, but under your stern it falls away to nothing. After lunch, I left the youngsters playing on the beach, and taking a light fishing line, I worked my way back for perhaps half a mile. The underbrush was heavy and most uncomfortable on bare legs, and I had to make wide detours to avoid the Devil's Club. Then I had to force my way across to the stream, as my trail had been one of least resistance. It was a perfect trout stream, the water running along swiftly on a stony bottom, but with deep pools beside the overhanging banks, cool shade under fallen tree trunks. The sunshine drifted through the alders and flickered on the surface of the running water. Somewhere deeper in the forest, the shy thrushes were calling their single, abrupt, liquid note. Later, when the sun went down, the single note would change to the ascending triplets. Except for the thrushes, there was not a sound. All was still. I didn't have a rod. You can't cast in this kind of growth. There is no room. I didn't use worms. I used an unripe huckleberry. An unripe huckleberry is about the size and color of a salmon egg, and trout love salmon eggs. Almost at once, I landed a fair-sized one on the mossy rocks. Another, and then another. I ran a stick through their gills and moved to another pool. But suddenly, I was seized with a kind of panic. I simply had to get back to my children. I shouldn't be able to hear them from where I was if they called. I listened desperately. There was just no sense to this blind urge that I felt. Almost frantic, I fought my way back by the most direct route, through the Salmonberry, Salal, and patches of Devil's Club. "Coming! Coming!" I shouted. What was I going to rescue them from? I didn't know, but how desperately urgent it was. I finally scrambled through to the beach, blood streaming down my legs, face scratched, hands torn, blood everywhere. 5 wondering faces looked at me in horror. The 2 youngest burst into tears at the sight of this remnant of what had once been their mummy. "Are you all right?" I gasped, with a sudden seething mixture of anger and relief at finding them alive and unhurt. After an interval, the 3 girls took my fish down to the sea to clean, the 2 little boys helping me wash off the blood as I sat with my feet in the stream. Devil's Club spikes are very poisonous, and I knew their scratches would give me trouble for days.
"There's a man along at the other end of the beach," volunteered Peter. "He's been watching us."
"All day," broke in John, "and he's all dressed in black."
I glanced up. A tall figure was standing there, against the trees, up behind the drift logs at the top of the beach, just standing there, arms hanging down, too far away to be seen plainly. Peculiar place for a clergyman to be, I thought inanely, and went back to the more important business of washing off the blood. Then I put on the shoes I had washed.
"Mummy!"
called Elizabeth. I glanced up. The 3 of them were looking towards the other end of the beach.
"The man is coming over," said Fran. "He's..."
"Mummy!"
shrieked Jan. It didn't take us 2 minutes to drag the dinghy into the water, pile in, and push off. The man was coming, but he was coming on all 4s.